We now have a situation where soldiers are, in a sense, being recruited, but then being paid to live on the land and to be soldiers from time to time. The Roman military establishment, for a very long time, had, as we've seen, recruited soldiers into a professional military and then paid them with tax revenues and trained them at the expense of the Roman state. Now we have, it would be an exaggeration to say, a privatization of the Roman military establishment, but it is less clearly a professional military establishment than it had been before. Still in all, much of the administrative hierarchy of the East Roman Empire is wrapped up in these thematic generals and the military hierarchy over which they preside. So we can see at once an accentuation of the tradition, already evident in late antiquity, in the direction of making the Roman world an increasingly military as opposed to civil establishment. At the same time, we can see an important and distinctive elaboration, evolution inside that military establishment itself. In other words, moving a little bit from a professional military establishment to, again, not amateur, that's not the word we want, but a military establishment which is organized, recruited, trained, led, mobilized somewhat differently. If you were to ask, what was the point of the theme system? In some very real ways, the point of the theme system was, yes, to pay for the military establishment in new ways in a world with much depleted tax revenue, but that's only a part of the story. More importantly was the idea that soldiers would be placed sort of all along the provinces of the empire and able to respond to crises, to problems, to challenges as they came up along one or another of the provinces. So then Heraclius provides us some insight into evolving military conditions in the Roman world. Heraclius and his successors did something else that is revealing. They called themselves Basileus ton Romaion, Emperor of the Romans. Now, you'll say, that's not very interesting. Emperors of the Romans, they'd been that for ages and ages and ages. Yes, but Heraclius called himself Basileus ton Romaion, not Imperator Romanorum. He used Greek, not Latin. He called himself Emperor of the Romans, but in Greek. And indeed, the official acts of the East Roman government are now almost never any longer issued in Latin. They're issued in Greek. So we see again an accentuation of the tendency to acknowledge the fundamentally Greek character of the ruling regime in the Eastern Mediterranean and indeed the people over whom that regime ruled. Let's fast forward and take another vantage point. Byzantium in the age of Leo III. And now I will say Byzantium for some reasons that we'll explain as I go along here. But I think by the early 8th century, it's pretty clear that we can talk about a new kind of regime and we can put a new name on it. Leo III reigned from 717 to 741 and was succeeded by his enormously capable son, Constantine V, who reigned from 741 until 775. So two reigns take us really right across the first three quarters of the 8th century. Now, these rulers are often said to belong to the Isaurian dynasty. That's a useful enough name you may encounter in reading, or you may hear of the Isaurian rulers of Byzantium. These are the people that we're referring to, though the term itself simply indicates that they came from one family. Now, the changes which take place under Leo III and his son Constantine V show us, once again, an accentuation of these trends, of these traditions that we have been talking about with the Age of Justinian, the Age of Heraclius. Wars are fought exclusively in Anatolia and the Balkans and along the eastern frontier. Italy was no more than a source of conflicts with Italians and popes. These emperors had almost uniformly bad relations with the popes. We'll, in a later lecture, come back and look at those from the standpoint of Rome, the popes, and the people of Italy. The elaboration of the theme system continued unabated. There will be no going back to older forms of Roman imperial administration. In the year 726, The Emperor Leo III issued a new law code, the Ecloga. Okay, issuing a law code. That doesn't sound very unusual for Romans. But this law code is unusual in a couple of ways. It is essentially an abridgment, a condensation of the Corpus Juris Civilis. It's also issued in Greek. There's a clear recognition. There's a clear recognition here, you see, that even the full scope of Roman law, as it existed in the time of Justinian, is no longer really quite suited to this evolving empire.